All right, welcome back to Anger, Sadness, and Envy, the Rampancy.net podcast. My name is Narkogen, and I'm the webmaster of Bungie Fansite and Rampancy.net. And we have a full house today. I'm here today with Blackstar of Blackstar Productions.
Hey.
As well as Miguel Chavez of Bungie Sightings.
Hello there, folks.
And also joining us today as a special guest is Cody Miller of High Speed Halo. Welcome, Cody, to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No, thanks. We're very glad you've joined us. We're also going to do something a little bit different here. We've had some comments on some of our recent episodes to the effect that we talk way too much about story and not enough about gameplay. So we're going to do a couple topics today on gameplay. The first thing we'd like to talk about, there's been a massive collection of couple threads on the HBO bulletin board about whether Halo is too easy, whether Halo 3 is too easy, whether ODST is too easy, whether maybe the franchise hasn't scaled with the skill of players over time. Cody, I think this is something that you've been talking about. Maybe could you tell us a little bit about, do you think Halo is too easy now? And if so, what should Bungie do about it?
I can only talk about the single player experience, and I think that's probably what you're going for. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely... definitely too easy now. I mean, I played ODST the first time through on Legendary, and I mean, I finished it in one sitting. It took me 55 minutes before I died even once. And I just don't think it was a very challenging experience at all. And I know a lot of other people will agree with me on the forums. So I'm definitely on the side that yes, it's kind of lost a bit of its challenge.
Now, do you think the games have actually gotten easier since the first one? Like, if you go back and play Halo 1 on Legendary now, is that harder for you than ODST?
No, I mean, looking back on it, I think Halo 1 on Legendary is actually easier than all three of the games. You know, Halo 2 is obviously the hardest on Legendary, and then Halo 3 and Halo 3 ODST are, I'd say, about the same in terms of difficulty. So I don't think it's that the games have gotten any easier. I think it's just that the players have gotten more skilled, and Bungie hasn't really done enough to diversify the experience and kind of get us out of our comfort zone and force us to learn new things.
Okay, so do you think then that a series of games like Halo ought to have a difficulty curve that spans, say, not just one game or the levels within the game, but over the franchise, that basically, like, Halo 1's Legendary should start off at a certain difficulty level, and the ending should, generally speaking, be more difficult than the beginning, and then that Halo 2 should start off being easier than Halo 2's ending and should end more difficult, so that, you know, as the franchise goes on, each game gets progressively harder?
I don't know if that's necessarily what I would want. I think I would more want it that each game offers you somewhat of a new experience so that when you go in, your skills don't necessarily translate over. Like with Halo 2, it's obviously very different than the first Halo, and you had to kind of relearn a lot of what you thought you knew. I mean, the weapon balance completely changed. The enemies were definitely a lot different. So I think something like that might be a better solution where instead of, you know, giving us a scenario that's very similar to the previous game so that we go into it already having the skills to, you know, pretty much have it mastered already, that they kind of switch it up a little bit and give us a scenario that, you know, maybe makes us think about something else or puts us in a situation we've never been in so that we have to learn new skills in order to complete the game.
How do you guys feel, Blackstar and Miguel? I mean, do you feel the same? Did you guys feel that ODST was a little on the easy side or not? Or
I think the general consensus is a lot of people felt either it was easy as well as too short. And I think those in combination were the major complaints and the reason why a lot of people felt either let down or it just didn't have the same kind of impact that they were hoping for, especially after the build-up when they had heard, oh, it's going to be expansion pack, oh, now we're going to make this a full game in and of itself, it's going to be, its own entity from soup to nuts, and it's going to be, you know, a full experience. I think that built up people's expectations, and when you do that, they're going to get, you know, built up more and more the longer that they wait for it. So I think over time, people's expectations had just gotten a little either too high or just... they got so excited that when they finally did get there, it never was as exciting as they hoped. You know, the toy is never as great when you have it as it does looking through the glass window at the store. So that, coupled with the fact that most players who are into the Halo genre and the games themselves have been playing these ones that Bungie's have made for almost a decade. Now, think about that. That's over two presidencies, over an entire, you know, college degree and graduate school degree, and most kids, you know, that were born, you know, a decade ago are just starting to get into it now. I mean, think about that. That's a very, very long time for, you know, people to be experienced with a particular game type. And the game type itself has been relatively the same. You have a couple of weapons, you have a couple of grenades, and you have a couple of bad guys, and this is what they're going to do. And that's it. You know,
I don't know. I think you could call it a timeless formula, though. I mean, we'd say that to some extent, it's really kind of stood up.
I would agree, you know, because that 30 seconds of fun, they did nail. But now I think after a decade, you know, people are expecting, okay, I want 45 seconds of fun. I want 60 seconds of fun, and I want them to be different. So I think in general,
Cody would probably say that he wants back to the 30 seconds. He's getting 10 seconds of fun.
Exactly. Or however you want to look at it that way. Yeah, I would agree. So it's just that I think people's expectations, coupled with the fact that they are over-experienced with what they've been playing so far, they're ready for something new. So, and I think a lot of people now are kind of foisting that hope upon Reach. Because, okay, we had ODST. It's not as replayable as a lot of people had hoped. Firefight was a great experiment, but it didn't quite fulfill everyone's hopes and expectations, too. So the campaign doesn't have that same, I'm going to be playing this over and over and over again. You know, I have to see what's on that wall. You know, I have to see that particular enemy on this particular difficulty, what have you. It didn't have that same kind of appeal.
I don't know. I've only played through it once so far, but I immediately went through and started to play for it again. And it wasn't just because, you know, I want to be able to familiarize myself to talk about it some more. I honestly enjoyed the campaign quite a lot, and I definitely wanted to go back and do it again. Maybe some levels more than others, but
I would have to agree. In fact, I would say that overall my experience with ODST was better on the campaign than it was with Halo 3. I think I enjoyed it more. I think the style and the gameplay and the design being more tactical and less run and gun appealed to me greatly. But there are a group, you know, a set group of people out there that are the exact opposite. And if they're not...
That would be me. That would be me.
Exactly. And if they're not being challenged with 43 enemies that they got to jump off 60 feet in the air while nailing a Banshee and a Rocket and a Hunter and sniping a...
All right. I don't know if that's me, but...
If they don't have that, they're going to feel let down. It's like, oh, this is too easy. I might as well be playing with Lincoln Logs.
So, well, no, I mean... If you're going to talk about Halo 3 versus ODST in terms of the campaign experience, I would definitely say I had a better campaign experience with Halo 3, possibly because, you know, the way ODST was set up, and, you know, you were talking about expectations. I think that's kind of what killed it for me was, you know, Bungie had initially said this is going to be a 3 to 5 hour game. I don't think there was enough even to sustain 3 to 5 hours. You know, you guys are talking about it being too short. I thought ODST was actually way too long. And then people come out and they say, oh, you know, 3 to 5 hours, and it's going to be, what, $40? And Bungie's like, yeah, it's going to be appropriately priced. But then you have people wanting more. So Bungie, you know, I mean, when I was at E3, Shishka made a point before we played Firefight to say, okay, now I want to let you all know that we've revised the campaign upwards to 6 to 8 hours. Presumably to give the people a better value for their money. But really all they did was they kind of padded out the game. You know, they added these segments in the game where you have to play Firefight in the campaign. You know, they added the hub world where you have to wander around and play hot and cold with finding an item.
You say this, Shishka said that they added the hub in later, that wasn't part of the initial
design?
No,
they didn't add the hub in later, but I mean, you can kind of tell where they padded the game in order to get those extra hours in order to satisfy people and make them feel like they're having a better purchase. They definitely had the hub world in beforehand.
Yeah, I think it's understood that the game was done like about a year before it actually shipped. So whatever tweaks that were made couldn't have been that global. It must have, you know, just probably, you know, just like you're saying, maybe stretching things out or something or other. But I don't, and I think that that's what Narcs commenting on. It couldn't have been something so major as introducing the whole the hub world itself or anything like that, right?
I'm sorry if that was the implication, but
We should, or rather, I feel like I should preface this by saying that the conversation on the forum got very raucous. I mean, it was very obviously people have very strong feelings about these things, and it's interesting because I do think that Blackstar kind of in some ways has it pinned down. We've kind of gone through the Halo experience 4 times now. We've kind of each time it's been finessed and finessed and finessed, and at the same time the reach for the game, meaning the kind of market it's trying to reach out to, has been growing. It's trying to be more and more like inclusive. So it's this kind of struggle between making things just as challenging for the longtime fans and also giving them, throwing them a bone in terms of story, plus also making it accessible to first time folks. In some ways, I kind of understand why Bungie said this was like a love letter or whatever that they called it, a thank you to the fans, and that it was for those people who were like, oh, I wish I could just keep fighting the Covenant, forever and ever and ever and ever. And I think their answer to folks are saying that it's not difficult enough, say, they gave us the skulls, and, they'd say, well, the skulls are there to kind of make things more difficult. But at the end, I know that you were one of those people who said the skulls were pointless. It was still boring. It was still dull, even with the skulls. But my feeling was that that just like Blackstar was saying, we've all gotten so skilled at this that it would almost have taken them kind of ripping everything out and kind of making things completely new and different just to make it, to bring us back to that sort of challenge that Halo 1 or maybe even Halo 2, if we want to, consider it worthy, to where it could be that challenging. And maybe it's Reach, maybe it's whatever the new unreleased title is that will eventually come up. Maybe those are the ones where we can really put more of our stake in being really sufficiently challenged and sufficiently, surprised and feel like it's like we're starting all over again.
I don't know. Every time I get nailed by a jackal sniper in ODST, I feel like it's Halo 2 again.
Well, see, I'm a little bit more optimistic about this than you are, Miguel. I mean, I honestly think that you could take the Halo 3 engine, and provided that you actually do some good level design, you could craft scenarios that are sufficiently challenging to, sustain my interest for a new game. I don't think that the experience itself has gotten boring. I think it was just it was a design issue. So I don't want to say that Halo as an experience has gotten old and boring. I just want to say that ODST wasn't designed as well as it could have been.
I think you must be a lot better at it than I am, because, for instance, I was just playing through on Tyree Plaza and noticing some of the tweaks that they made, for instance, putting health back in, putting fall damage back in, taking away your motion detector and giving you the radar. There's one sequence, I think it's the last combat sequence in Tyree Plaza, which ends with a pair of hunters. And I was up on one of the ledges, and I was looking out, and I was like wondering, where are they? Where are they? I can hear them. And then it came through the door behind me through this tiny little corridor that usually was, much smaller than you'd expect. And I was like, whoa, I realized that kind of trick only works once. But I actually thought there were a number of very well-designed encounters in ODST that, okay, maybe they only challenge you once, but, I mean, there are plenty of tricks that only work on a player once, and afterwards you know where guys are going to come from, what's going to happen, and you adjust.
That's interesting you mentioned that particular encounter, because the first time I did it, when the hunters came out, I was way up in the, the buildings and the ledges above, so I saw hunters happen to go in the courtyard, and I totally missed what that experience that you had of them coming out from behind you. I didn't even catch them when they came out. I just looked into the courtyard and I'm like, oh, there's some hunters there.
It's all a misunderstanding. See, it's all just a misunderstanding. You just didn't play it the way we played it, and there
maybe
you go.
Maybe how Bungie expected you to play it. So
maybe that's
Well,
I kind of feel like that's saying it's that, you know, I do think we can't not acknowledge that we, and maybe NARC, maybe you don't want to throw your hat into this side of the ring, but I do feel very comfortable with the game. It's not quite so challenging for me anymore. Even when I go back to Halo 1 and do the run through the campaign, it's like, okay, I know where they're going to come. And I hear what you're saying about it's the level, the way that the levels were planned out. And it's unfortunate that the engine is not open-ended where we could see, well, could someone create like a level that really would be challenging? Because I'm kind of trying to figure out what could they have done that would have made it more, I mean, you know, something concrete that we could visualize.
I would say maybe add a little more verticality into the combat. You know, I know they got a little bit into that where you've got the jackal snipers up on the ledges in the window buildings. But, you know, I found myself never having to look up and down more than just a little bit. And, you know, I'm thinking maybe, I mean, you know, like if you go back to Halo 1, you know, you're playing Pillar of Autumn and you run into, you know, the stairway and Cortana says the Covenant on the landing above us, you know, like that's a really cool encounter. You know, that encounter is cooler than any of the encounters in ODST, frankly. And if they just give us something like that, you know, where it's not just a bunch of enemies running at us, you know, when we're on level ground with them, you know, if that's concrete enough, I don't know if that's what you're going for.
I guess that's kind of valid. I mean, I'm trying to think now. Yeah, the fact that it's an open plaza means that you're basically always looking straight ahead and can kind of see out into the vista. If you're seasoned enough, you know what to spot for. And that kind of goes back into the whole of visor mode, that kind of helps also always tell you where things are. And
yeah, visor mode definitely made things very, very simple by highlighting all the enemies. It's almost a shame because, you know, Bungie was talking about how they wanted this noir aesthetic, and part of noir is you have, you know, dark low-key lighting, but I guess at the same time that would hide the enemies and make things too difficult. So they've created a feature that almost negates the stylistic choice that they're making when they're designing the levels the way they are in terms of lighting.
Well, if you really want to challenge yourself, all you really got to do is just go through the entire game without using visor mode once. In fact, I have to say I'm surprised that they didn't have a medal for that.
But it's wrong to predicate your challenge design on your players voluntarily not using a feature that doesn't have any limitations on it. Like, for instance, they could have made visor mode work on a temporary basis, or they could have used it.
Yeah, or just have a battery like the flashlight, the original Halo.
You know, then, and not for the enemies. I do kind of like it in the trade-off, in the sense that, okay, you generally have an idea where enemies are, which basically means they can put more snipers on the map because you've got more of a chance of knowing where they are if you're using your visor mode. But then once the enemies get in close, it's not nearly as useful, and it doesn't give you the kind of, you know, timing around corners. Like the motion tracker was always great, right? Because you just back yourself up, you go around the corner, you wait for the enemy to round the corner, and then you hit him square in the face. And without the, you know, visor is not quite as good as that as the motion detector is, because the map comes up and you can't see what's going on.
I think another thing is that because it's a closed system, I think a lot of people's replayability and interest in a game over the long term is really predicated on the contributions of the community as a whole. And while Forge is really great for setting up multiplayer maps for people to play, you're still stuck to a particular game type, which is running around killing everybody else. There hasn't been any particular venue or opportunity for anyone to come up with campaign-style levels or set up a system where Bungie could, you know, release portions of levels or games and get people's feedback on them and release like one, two, or three levels and say, okay, here's an update or an extension for this particular title. I think we touched on it once before last podcast, and that was something that really kind of sparked in my head, that kind of got the gears turning. And that might actually alleviate some of the problems that Cody was mentioning, where at least if there was a certain level of difficulty or challenge preset by the player, if they had a Forge mode that could run through two, three, four little sections, and they could make up their own little you know, groups of mountains or obstacles or things like that, they could set their difficulty as well as the game type on how to defeat that particular difficulty, and therefore the replayability or the interest in that might bring a little bit more longevity to the title, as opposed to being, this is our set block, we have 8 levels, they're like such and such, and that's all the way, always how it's going to be. So,
well, when you talk about difficulty, I think you have to look at all the different factors that contribute that. And we were talking before about, well, skulls, right? Skulls give you the ability to modify the difficulty, but only in certain basic ways. Like, for instance, I mean, a couple of triggers for very basic enemy behavior, grenade tossing, grenade avoidance. Many of the other ones are directly related to the damage model, doing more damage, being able to take more damage, but it doesn't affect at base how smart the AI is. I mean, at the lower difficulty levels, the AI is just very, very conservative and very tentative in making attacks. And then you get up to legendary, where I think that's basically, I don't think Bungie is pulling punches. I think the AI is about as good as Bungie knows how to make it. Those guys are as convincingly smart as they can make them. They could make them harder by regressing, you know, and giving, for instance, giving them perfect information on, you know, every player movement, being able to know where you are even when they can't see you. But that wouldn't be fair. I don't think we'd want that.
No, then you'd be playing Far Cry, and who wants to do that? The options and the variants that people can do are always going to be, you know, predicated to being within a certain set of limits. And yeah, I think Bungie with the Skulls has given us a certain amount of variable, but of course, yeah, it's only going to go so far. And I think certain ones beyond that would, I think, eliminate certain amounts of the fun factor and increase the frustration for certain players. But again, there is also that accessibility. They've got such a wide range of popularity. I mean, we're talking from, you know, 13-year-olds to 35-year-olds who are playing this game, and that's a pretty wide gap when you think about it, as far as experience as well as interest. So, yeah, I don't know. It's almost like it's a victim of its own popularity. So as far as there's always
going to be, that would be my take on it. It's unfortunate that it has to straddle so many different types of but Cody's point, I do have to acknowledge, is he's saying, you know, like it's all about the layout. That, I mean, maybe that's the one thing. It's the only thing which we can test, short of one of us, you know, they're getting a job like within Bungie and being able to play with the tools. But you know, maybe that would have done some, you know, maybe that would have taken care of some of that frustration there in trying to enjoy the game. But it looks like at this moment it's just a thought experiment, really. We can't really do anything.
Well, not really, because you have Halo 3 to compare it to, which was done on the same engine. So the only difference between Halo 3, well, no, because in ODST you have a different set of weapons, don't you? You have the pistol and...
Right, and so what level in Halo 3, I mean, since you're volunteering then, what level in Halo 3 would you consider, like what experience in there, a confrontation or whatnot, would you consider to be, you know, a grade above?
A grade above ODST? It's been a while since I played Halo 3. Let me run through the levels. Well, the Covenant, I like the level with the Covenant. I think that has a lot of very interesting encounters on it. I mean, you know, when you go into the structures that have, you know, the shield generators you have to deactivate. Is that what you're doing? Yeah, you come in and all these drones are coming at you from the ceiling, and you know, you have a lot of options about where you can go. You can use the brute shot to grenade jump up to the ledges and fight the enemies up there, or you can fight them down below. And I think a lot of the vehicular combat in the Covenant is very, very well done, because, you know, you're going up a hill and you have to fight your way up the hill. You have these turrets that are killing you and banshees that are, you know, shooting at you from behind. I would say that I think the Covenant's probably the best level in Halo 3, at least in my opinion. So I don't know what you guys think, but I think there were a lot of encounters in that level that were structured very well.
Narc, what do you think about, how about if we were to throw this back into the story and say, well, maybe because you're an ODST and not an MC, you can't have those kind of, maybe in serving the story, you can't have this chaos, because you're going to be dying all the time. If it, drones above you, and you know.
I don't know. I think obviously we've seen some discussion on that as well, right? And we've had some people say that, gee, there's not much difference being the ODST. The ODST is still such a badass. You can still wade into these encounters, you know, with abandon and not really worry about things. And maybe you should. I don't know. I go back and forth a little bit on it. We were talking actually before the podcast started that one thing I think that Bungie did do well in ODST is that they created a higher perception of danger. With the screen going red and the vocalizations by the character, when the ODST characters are getting hurt, I think it's pushed more to the front of your awareness than with the chief, who's more stoic. You know, he doesn't vocalize as much when he's hurt. It's more when he dies that you get it. I don't know. I think they didn't go that way. But I could have seen it. I could have seen them going more towards stealth in the hub segments if they had made it so that there were some obvious encounters there that would have been too hard, except for the best players. And the thing really would have been to try and evade. I mean, there are some sequences like that in Myth, I think, where you know there are roving patrols through an area that greatly outnumber you, and that unless you're one of the best Myth players on the planet, you stand a much better chance of going through that level without fighting. And Halo just isn't built that way. Even the hub sequences, I think, aren't built that way. You could go around, but
they eventually find you. I mean, the roving enemies will come across you even if you avoid them.
Yeah.
Once you get the super to help you, then you get a mongoose, and then you can kind of run. You can just race past almost any enemy. But at that point, you know, the game practically done anyway. So, it's a tough one to kind of come to any sort of conclusion about.
I kind of feel a little differently about the perception of danger because in Halo 3, when your shields went down, you knew you were in trouble because you didn't have a lot of health. Whereas in ODST, when your stamina is depleted, you have a lot of health. So it was a normal occurrence for me to be fighting with a red screen, and it didn't really frighten me as much as shields down in Halo 3. So for me, maybe the perception of danger was lessened in that regard, just because I know the screen is red, but I still have a lot of health left, and I can still continue to fight.
See, I guess I just don't rationalize it to that degree. I see the red screen and I hear him panting. It reminds me of the heartbeat sound. Actually, I think they did a good thing with the beeps there. It's a little, you know, because the heartbeat sound got annoying after a while. But still, I always thought there was some drama there. Like in the H1 campaign, you know, when your health is low, there's this drama that's created. And when you get through an encounter, you know, having had very low health the whole time, and then you finally get a health pack, there's this great sense of relief that you get. It feels like more of an accomplishment, the same encounter, because you did it without health. And so I think I get a little bit of that in ODST now. I hear those noises, and I'm like, whoa, I have to get behind cover. I'm getting pounded. You're looking at it more rationally. I think you're like, okay, yes, I see what they're doing. They're making these noises at me, and the screen is red, but I see this meter. I'm okay. I can keep fighting.
Well, yeah, and when you pick up a health pack in Halo 1, there's a nice big white flash in the screen to let you know, it's okay. But in ODST, the flash is very minimal in ODST. You know, I picked up health packs and not realized that I picked them up. I would have made the flash like Halo 1.
I would have shot you dead if you did that. I absolutely loathe the Halo 1 flash. And if Bungie's listening to this, what were you thinking? And I also want to talk to whoever's handling all the cutscenes, because for some reason in ODST, if I might just skip for a second, the cutscenes in Halo 3 ODST, for some reason, some of them had either fade or cut to blacks, but some of them still had this bright white blinding thing, okay? Bungie, what are you thinking about blinding your audience that's trying to watch this? I've never understood the rationale of doing that, and I hate it.
What are you? I don't remember what you're talking about.
I think they said at one point that the whiteouts were used to cover spawning and despawning of certain items on the screen and to prevent other various graphical things from appearing that they didn't want to. but I think that was in Halo 2.
Yeah, I can't think that they couldn't fix that by switching that to, instead of white, to black. I just can't figure it out. Because when you're sitting in a nice dark room and suddenly you're blinded by this huge bright white light, it completely ruins your night vision and whatever you're watching. It ruins the experience for me. And boy, I'm going to beat the guy who thought that was a great idea. The other thing is that as far as the story goes, it kind of pulls you out of it, because when I was ever getting a health pack in Halo 1, I used to always close my eyes every time that would happen, because I thought, after all this huge struggle of getting through all these enemies and whatnot, your reward is to suddenly be blinded. Didn't seem that kind of a good thing to me, and it certainly didn't increase my enjoyment of the experience at all, so, yeah.
Are you sitting 2 feet away from your TV playing in the dark? I mean...
Yes, he is.
Oh, okay. But then maybe go back a little bit and sit on the couch, man. Like, turn on the lights and relax a little.
People are too small. No, actually, at the time, I had my projector, and Miguel and Narkle will remember this. I mean, I had the 102-inch wide screen, and that's when I was sitting back on the couch. But still, it was just too bright for me, guys. So, yeah, I definitely...
Oh, I thought you were talking about the movie theater.
Yeah, well, it was the same.
No, that projector was not that bright. I have to say, very big, but not that bright.
No, not that. No, the one that I had.
Well, I'm going to see you know, at the movie theater when that white flash comes in. I could see that.
Yeah, that
being
was
real.
No, the ones that I had over at Claude's and the ones that I had in my room, that was on the NEC one, and that was very bright, and that was 102 inches wide. So yeah, that was a little too much, guys. But again, yeah.
Okay. So I guess if you don't want a bright flash, then they should have some other kind of indication you've picked up the health pack. Because I would pick up health packs and see and not realize it.
Make a beep noise, make a jingle, make a...
Well, yeah, I guess anything to make it clear.
Ugh, is not high on my options as far as what I would pick. sorry.
Okay, let's try to tie it up together here. Difficulty-wise... What do we want out of Reach? Is there something we want, Bundy? Are we wanting the same formula again in Reach, just with a graphical upgrade out of the new engine? Or are we looking for a totally new experience? Or what is it that we're expecting? What do we want Bungie to do?
Halo 1 and the Halo 3 engine. That's what we want. That's what we've always wanted. That's what everybody here wants. Because everybody loved Halo 1, despite its flaws. They just want Halo 1 to look like Halo 3.
I want that too, but I don't think that's what they're doing for Reach. So what do we want out of Reach?
Well, I would love some more Covenant action. I would love fighting elites again. I think that is going to be a big plus for a lot of players who feel either let down or not as excited by fighting brutes. And they've tried to make the brutes look like elites as much as possible with a lot of the armor changes and things. But at the same time, their playability and their movements and their style, it just didn't feel the same. And I think everybody fell in love with fighting the Covenants with elites.
My theory is that that's cosmetic. I basically think that Brute AI now is pretty much the same as the Elite AI always was, and it's just that people nostalgically remember them as being more clever. I remember Elites jumping out of the way for grenades and jumping off bridges in Assault in the Control Room. Elites weren't that smart.
Yeah, but it was how they did it. It was how they sounded. It was their behavior. It was the whole package. And yeah, nostalgia is definitely part of it, I think.
Wart, wart, wart.
No, the only time an elite would charge at you is if you stuck it with a plasma grenade. You drop a brute shield with the plasma pistol and it charges at you in a berserk. The elites definitely did not do that.
I'm not so sure you're right about that. I'm pretty sure that on Silent Cartographer on Legendary in Halo 1, that if you get an elite, you get its shields down and you get its health down to a certain point, it will also suicide you. I think it's just a question of parameters. I think a brute does it more easily. A brute will do it with no shields, even if it has health, whereas an elite will only do it as a suicide attack when it's going to die anyway.
Hate those.
Okay.
Hey, what do you think?
I can't. I think my philosophy has always been the same. I don't want to predict anything. I'm very much like Claude's thoughts with ODST. Like, I was very happy with how the campaign went. And so if Reach is just another step, you know, slightly more in any facet of that, I'd be happy. I can't really think of anything else. You know, I guess one longstanding wish that everyone talks about is being able to pilot some of the ships that, you know, like a Scarab or something, you know, be able to have some fun with that. But otherwise,
maybe they could let us crash a Pelican once. That would be a change, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, sure. There you go.
That'd be a plus. And we know you'd crash it, Narc. Yeah, as far as any serious hopes for the game, you know, because the other one was kind of a joke. But yeah, as far as serious ones, I honestly think Bungie really needs to crank this up to 11. I think Cody having his point that, yeah, people are experienced, they know the game, they've played the game, they're familiar. They want this pushed up because they remember how excited they got when they first saw some of the Halo 3 stuff and they saw how awesome it looked, and they wanted the gameplay to match that. And I think there's always been kind of this nagging thing in the back of people's minds going, it's not as good as I really think it is. And I think people want to be excited again. They want this thing to be pushed and completely, you know, gone off the charts on gameplay as well as looks. So if Bungie can do that, I think it'll be absolutely awesome. As far as specifics, yeah, I don't know if I want to speculate, because speculation leads to anticipation. Anticipation can lead to serious disappointment if they aren't met. So, yeah, so I don't think I'll get too much on the speculation, but I really, really hope that Bungie does push this a little bit beyond the comfort envelope that they're currently in.
Ninjas on fire.
Well, let's talk about, I guess, in terms of the story, since it is Reach, we have to make some, unless Bungie's going to retcon again, but we have to assume some parts of the canon have to hold. So we're going to be using, what is that, Mark IV?
Yeah.
Spartan armor? Wouldn't that be the...
I would expect them to retcon. Like, even in ODST, the visor is such a great thing. Why in the heck doesn't a Spartan have a visor? If the ODSTs have this map, okay, fine, assisted by the superintendent, and that's why they have the city map, but...
It's in the mail. They just haven't gotten them yet.
Yeah.
The galaxy's a big player.
but you're right. I mean, maybe that they would take care of that by giving you levels where you play as an ODST.
Oh, maybe.
And then that's where they give you visor mode. And so that kind of fits in with everything else, you know, that's gone on. But like, for instance, like the Halo 1 pistol, that should return because that is... The pistol that was available then, you know, and
not going to happen.
And when I
not going to happen.
When I talk about the Mark IV, I mean that in terms of what Blackstar that was saying, having Halo 1 and like a Halo 3 engine, the cool factor of seeing the Mark IV with all its shiny bumpy mapping stuff. You know, so that might be kind of a pleasure.
Yeah,
that would be kind of neat. You know,
I would.
My wife would approve of that. She definitely does not like the slimmer, more svelte Halo 2/Halo 3 Spartan suit. She liked the big bulky guy in Halo 1. Okay, let's move on to the next subject. It's also another gameplay related topic. We had some requests to talk about the Warthog run at the end of Halo 3. We did a big episode on Halo 3, but we didn't really talk about that run because we got caught up by story issues.
Business models.
Yeah, and business models. We won't talk about business models for a while, though.
Thank God.
So,
can we get clarification on what exactly they wanted? Because...
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know, this, you know, like what, because to me, it's like this could be a one sentence comment on the Warthog run. Like, so what exactly were they looking for?
Oh, well, I think they wanted us basically to compare it to the Warthog run in Halo 1 in terms of, well, was this a step back? Was this a step forward? Which one was better and why? And I, with regard to the difficulty, there are some people who feel it's too easy, and there are other people who feel that it is arbitrarily hard because some of its elements are random and that it's just a trial and error exercise that you have to play through until you know which tiles are going to go and which route is the safe route, and that it's frustrating until you get it, and then once you get it, it's boring.
Hmm. Interesting.
That sounds exactly like Halo 1. that's how I feel. I mean, I was going to say, you know, it was exciting the first few times. Then after that, it became kind of rote.
So do you think that they're both the same and that the differences aren't really that important? I mean, do you like that gameplay sequence or not? Or
I actually did like it. I remember playing it in a hotel, that I was given the opportunity to play it the before it shipped. And it was one of those events where, you know, I played it for like 12 hours to try to finish through the whole thing. And so it was late at night. They were watching me, trying to get me to leave. And I was like, I had to get through this Warthog run to finish the darn thing. So it was definitely, for me, it was very the suspenseful. I understood what they were going for. I also saw where if you lag behind even a little bit, yeah, then the random stuff would kind of kick in and then it would become a real mess. But if you were able to kind of keep up with whatever the initial scripting was, there wasn't anything really random about it. Like I think that I could go back and do that run and nail the entire thing because I know kind of where what the more or less path is. So, but what I did find, where I did find the pleasure in it is that it was something which harkened back to Halo 1, except that now you had wide open vistas and you really got to see, you know, this just giant, you know, crazy world blowing up in front of you. So that was something that I think folks were like wondering, you know, how come we're not seeing this sort of massive epic, you know, like a run through this world falling apart, and here that we were getting it. So I didn't have any problems with it. You know, I thought it was really cool.
I think I enjoyed it more than the Halo 1 version myself, just because. Yeah. So because when you look at it, I mean, in Halo 1, well, if we're looking at it from a speedrunner's perspective, in Halo 1, the optimal route is very easy to identify. Whereas in Halo 3, on their Warthog run, you actually have a lot of options and you have a lot of different ways that you can go. A lot of them are very subtle, but there's no really optimal way to do it. And so you can have a little bit of fun and you can kind of go, you know, take a different route every now and then. And which is why I kind of enjoyed it a little bit more than I did the Halo 1 run. And I mean, I can fire that up and just run through it. And, you know, even though I know where all the you know, the panels blow off, but I can still run through and have a good time, you know, just because it's really nice. I don't know.
There were a couple of things that really stood out to me when I did that run in comparison to the first one. And one is the way they implemented ticking clock. Whereas in the first one, you know, it's very literal. They put a clock up on the screen and say, okay, the Pillar of Autumn is going to blow at this time. You have this much time to reach the end of the run. And in the Halo 3 version, it's implemented a little bit differently. There's this percentages that Cortana is giving you, and it's not, you know, it's not like there's one clock all the way through. You basically have a certain amount of time to reach the end of each area, and if you fail to get through that area, then more of the bits, you know, the hubs that you're driving through start to fall off. And so if you go too slow, you can be killed. I think what I liked about the new run is that it sets up. I mean, generally, I'm not a big proponent of trial and error as a meaning of learning gameplay, but I think the problem I had with the H1 thing, I mean, back, you know, when you hit the first time and it was actually difficult to get there in the time because you hadn't yet learned the route, you basically had to go all the way through the clock sequence to find out that you'd failed, and once you did that, you had to start over. Whereas with the Halo 3 version, any of those mistakes like that, taking the wrong route, you know, dropping through a hole or ending up on one of the hubs when it dies, it kills you. And so you don't have to, you know, it always seemed to me that there was a point in Halo 1 where if you made a mistake early on, you knew that there was no way you're going to be able to finish. And the only way you'd had to do it was to save and quit and start and, you know, restart from checkpoint. You had to manually do it. But here, Halo 3 at least kills you and says, okay, you're not going to make it now, and you don't have to go back and do the whole thing. And I thought that was a little bit better.
Well, depending on your mistake. I mean, if you make a small mistake in the beginning of the Halo 1 Warthog run, you can easily make up that time. But if you make a mistake in the Halo 3 Warthog run, it kills you right away. So you don't have the option of, say, playing the beginning poorly but making it up in the end that you do in the Halo 1 run.
Right, but I would say there that it gives a preference actually for the novice player or for the player who is early on in his experience of the game, right? Because in the Halo 1, if it's just one of your first run-throughs, the chance of you making it up is less. Whereas if you're an expert, you know, you're right, if you're an expert and you know what you're doing, but then you forget and you make a stupid mistake, yes, you could make it up in Halo 1, whereas in Halo 3 you can't because it'll kill you. But the Halo 3, I think, favors the novice player because it basically says, okay, you made a mistake, I'm going to punish you, but I'm going to get you right back in the game right away. I'm not going to make you, you know, go through a futile attempt because, again, as a novice, you wouldn't be able to make that up after you've made the initial mistake, especially not with H1's ticking clock as opposed to Halo 3's.
What I find interesting, actually, because I did enjoy Halo 3's one version of the Maw better than Halo 1's, is 1's, I think, suffered from some arbitrary ship design silliness, a little bit too much repetition. And the one saving grace, though, that I thought that Halo 3's was lacking, though, was the Foehammer moment. And if you guys all remember that moment where you thought Foehammer was going to be picking you up, and she goes down in this, burning pelican, never to be seen or heard from again. That was actually, if you were engrossed in the story, that was actually kind of an emotional moment the first time you saw it. And there wasn't that moment in the Halo 3 version. And I kind of looked back
Actually two moments, by the way. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, actually, Halo 1 was actually interesting. There was a second moment when you had to do that Warthog jump, and you thought the goal was to get to the upper ramp,
right?
And actually, you were going for the lower ramp, and that was another moment where you're like, "Man, did I make a mistake?" And actually, and no, you were actually doing it just right.
Right. Well, I was thinking I was thinking more story, emotionality, and whatnot. But yeah, no, I see what you're definitely saying, and yeah, that's definitely true. But it made me think back before when we were talking about Johnson's death, and it made me think because even though Foehammer as a character was never someone that you actually met, she was actually a character that was part of the story and at least peripherally when she's, you know, schlepping you around everywhere and picking up people, that she was an element, you know, and it may not have been a main character of which you interacted with directly, but you did get some kind of emotional involvement with, you know, the bus driver, if you will. As she's carting you around everywhere, and suddenly when you see her death, it's like, it's like, you know, not only have you lost time, but you've also lost the player. So with that one, it makes me think that maybe Bungie might have, I don't know exactly how they would replicate it, but if they had Johnson's death happen later, instead of being killed by Guilty Spark, if he had been killed later, some way during the run, where he either falls out and gets knocked out of the hog or has to get out to go do something and then dies, or you have to leave him, that I think would have been much more of an emotional peak to the story. It would have replicated or at least given homage to the Foehammer moment, where, because I mean, there's a very deep piece of emotional music there, you know. A lot of people, I don't know how much they even talk or remember it, but that was always a kind of a moment that kind of hit me, where you hear that kind of lulling Halo music in the background, and you see her go down. I don't know. It kind of hit me. Yeah. So that was the only thing I felt lacking.
I have to give you props on that.
Oh, thank you. That was the only thing.
I have to agree with you. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I just felt that second one.
I just like listeners to witness that I attempted to get these guys to talk about gameplay, and we're talking about a Warthog race, and we've still managed to bring it back to story somehow.
I got a gameplay comment here.
Okay,
one thing I think the Halo 1 Maw run did better was made it a little easier to play co-op and keep two vehicles together, because, you know, there's nothing killing you, you can slow down and wait for your buddy to catch up. Whereas in Halo 3, if one vehicle gets behind, that's it, they're done, it's going to fall out, and when they spawn, they're not going to have a vehicle. And I mean, I think a lot of people have probably encountered this because they played the, you know, they tried to do that Vidmaster challenge. And especially with four players, it's difficult in the Halo 3 Maw run to keep them all together.
Yeah, I have not tried to do that achievement yet myself. I think I've only ever done that run with one co-op player, with two players total. And but there's four
of us. Let's do it after the podcast.
there are some vehicles strewn about the level, but not enough of them. I think they put a Warthog on a couple of the hubs. So that you do have a chance if you die near there to pick up another vehicle, but not everywhere you would die, obviously.
It is interesting though when you start to now throw in the multiplayer part of it. You know, that does make it that does give more opportunity for there to be tweaks which could be made to make it all the more interesting. You know, so
of course Halo 1 doesn't have online co-op though, so that's a strike against it. So at least Halo 3 gives you that option. Another reason to want Halo 1 on the Halo 3 engine, I guess.
Halo 1 should be a mini game within Reach.
Well, you go up to an arcade machine and you're playing Halo 1.
Right. And you get thrown right into the Warthog run.
That would be neat, yeah, having Halo 1 as an arcade game machine that ODSTs play when they're on the ship, right? Okay, let's move on. We did have one other request to go back and look at something in Halo 3, and that was the speech by Guilty Spark in that last level, where the game comes out and tells us, "You are Forerunner," which somehow people still manage to spin one way or the other and say, "Well, that really means we are." And other people are like, "Well, that really means we aren't." How do you guys feel? What does he mean when he says, "You are Forerunner"? Are humans genetically identical to Forerunners? Is he talking in a more vague way? What does that mean? How did you guys interpret that?
Now that we've gone through so many games with the Monitor, I think it's not a stretch to assign him that even though he is a computer, that he is an AI, that he is not infallible. I think that we've noticed that, you know, in how he turns around and becomes your friend again. When the Master Chief could have said, "Well, why weren't you my friend back then? How come you couldn't have figured it out?" So he could be making a mistake. You know, he could be saying you are Forerunner, and just like how you mentioned, it could be like a DNA kind of you are Forerunner. You know, you are Forerunner progeny. You are Forerunner like descendant. Might not necessarily mean that we are actually Forerunner, but it also kind of throws me. It kind of throws me out of the game because I think it's Bungie hedging their bets until someone like a Greg Bear or someone decides to really, you know, nail it down and really explain what that means. I think that they're purposely trying to play both sides. So
if humans were, directly related, if they were like a lost tribe kind of situation, it would explain some of the mechanisms, such as, you know, why you supposedly need a human to push the button to activate these rings. It's got to be about the worst biometric security mechanism ever. But
why all the door switches are exactly at the right height for a human.
My question is, in Halo 1 in the library, if you shoot the Monitor, why he doesn't tell you to stop being so Forerunner if the humans are the Forerunner?
Oh, I think you caught Ferrix in that one there, unless that was one of the writers' fault.
Yeah, so I'm not even gonna try.
Well, I was always curious, and I didn't think about it actually until a little while ago, was and maybe somebody's explained this in Story or Canada or on a wiki page or something, but has there been an accepted differential that people have made between whether he meant the Spartans are Forerunner or the humans are Forerunner? Because he's talking specifically to the Chief.
I think in the novelization of the Flood, there is a reference where Guilty Spark talks about another reclaimer who failed, and it's a dead Marine.
He said, "That's right." And the Marine, the Chief, actually goes down and looks at his name tag, and it's funny that actually particular story element was a great one. I wish actually they played more of that, or that was in the game.
So you're suggesting though that there's a difference between Forerunner and Reclaimer, like what, all humans are Reclaimer, but only Spartans are Forerunner? That maybe they like Oni dug up some Forerunner tech, and that's the genesis of the Spartan program, or actually Covenant tech, which was recovered from Forerunner tech.
Exactly. And well, he's never quite specific about either one, because he does mention Reclaimer on several different points. And like you said, in the story, there was supposedly a Reclaimer that was just a human. Or was it be that, like what Miguel said, Guilty Spark made a mistake? He thought that that was a Reclaimer, and in fact, he really wasn't, and that's why he died. So,
but why would he make that? Why would he make that mistake?
He was a Reclaimer because the Master Chief could clearly activate the Halos. I mean, he activated the ring in Halo 3, and if only Reclaimers can activate the ring, then quite clearly he did not make a mistake.
So yeah, so I don't know.
See what I mean? It's just too open ended. I think there's just not enough.
I don't know. I for the longest time I fought it, and I said Bungie wouldn't do that. That's too cliched. Humanity is not that special. Humanity doesn't need to be that special in order for this to be a good story. I kind of liked the idea of humans just being this tiny, insignificant race that just happens to be fighting against these huge, these huge and overpowering forces. First the Covenant, and then the Flood, and maybe eventually finding some way with the assistance of this ancient technology to get out of this trap. The idea that, you know, we're really descended from this ancient super race that actually built all these things, and that we're the most important species in the galaxy. I really didn't think Bungie was going to do that. I wanted them not to do that, but I found that I couldn't come up with enough evidence to resist it anymore, and so I just had to give in and say, yeah, okay. He said, between the context of Contact Harvest by Staten and the final ending in Halo 3, I'm just like, yep, they're the same. They're related. I had to give up.
So why don't you just come over why don't you just come over to my camp, the gameplay over story camp here.
Well, no, to say that I was disappointed in that one particular element, I wouldn't say that means that I still don't think that story is the real interesting part. I mean, I would say that one of the reasons why I enjoyed ODST maybe more than you did was that I found the story engaging enough that I was interested and excited in that. Whether that means I'm glossing over flaws in the gameplay or not, I don't know.
I think to Shisker's everlasting detriment, well, they're going to find out that Spartans come back in time from the future, and there are the Forerunner. I don't know.
Yeah, time travel.
No, that I dig. I can dig.
No, Master Chief goes back in like a million years, and he impregnates someone and creates the Forerunner.
Ta-da!
Nicole.
Race.
There we go.
Nicole.
Nicole, there you go. just going, because you touched on it, Narc, so isn't there a point in one of the novels where the Covenant are coming, you know, they're like coming to Earth, or maybe it's one of the other planets that we've colonized, and they're like, oh, it's full of Forerunner artifacts, but it's actually, yeah,
that's Contact. That's
our humans.
That's Contact Harvest.
I got to read right, that one. Okay. I get that for Christmas.
That's a good book, I have to say.
I got a bunch of them.
There was mention in the Halo 2 manual, too. I had the Halo 2 Special Edition, so it was from the Covenant perspective. And they talked about on Earth how they had to be very careful because they didn't want to tamper with all the Forerunner artifacts and buildings.
Right, but wasn't that when we... I thought that was a thing where they at first thought Forerunner the artifacts were really objects. And then there was dawning...
Well, they specifically mentioned the buildings. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Why don't we move on to the next topic? Has everybody seen the first anime? I guess the second one is already out now, but I'm talking about the first one, which was Babysitter.
Oh, damn. I get 2 hours to get that. Oh.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to, right after we finish here, I'm going to have to go get that second one.
Quick, before
it's on YouTube.
Yeah, but who wants to watch it on YouTube quality? I want to watch it in stunning
high definition. I know.
I don't know. As far as I can tell, Xbox Live actually detects your connection quality, so I'm pretty sure what I'm actually getting is YouTube quality.
Probably. Well, you are 11 time zones away. Yes, I saw it. Yes, I enjoyed it. Yes, I think that it does have issues, or this particular one had issues, because I haven't seen any other ones yet. Because a lot of people, I'd heard them talking about particular drawing styles or story elements or things like that. I get the impression and the feeling that this is just kind of an expansion to appeal to a certain aspect who are anime fans and Halo fans, as opposed to being, you know, canon and the direct, oh, this is what we expect it to look like and this is how it's supposed to be. I think it's them just playing in the anime backyard. And that's going to be fun for some people and not so fun for others.
I think there may be a problem in how they're addressing this, and that I think they may have locked themselves out of almost any audience. As you said, like people who like Halo but don't like anime, there were lots of comments in the forums like, well, I hate that spiky anime hair, and that guy had that anime hair. And then they're showing the hair inside the helmets because without the hair, you can't tell the difference between the characters, which I think is true, right? I mean, that when you draw a face with so, you know, a very small number of lines, it's the hair that really gives you the characterization. That's how you know who is who.
Now, Red versus Blue did it. You just need to make the armors a little different color.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they were going to have a cape and be breathing heavy. So, you know, you got to go for whatever genre you're aiming at. And I think the anime genre has exactly all those things, regardless of what style you pick. And I think this particular style, it's appropriate for what it is.
Right. I think that for Halo fans, it's too much anime. And for anime fans, it's too much Halo. And I think that where those two things intersect is not going to be people who really like it. It's going to be people who really don't like it.
Two great tastes that don't taste great together.
Yeah, I don't know. The things I noticed about it were that, you know, for some reason there were bits where the Spartan was just really off model. And, you know, and things seemed to change size and scale drastically from scene to scene where they were these big differences. And from a story perspective, I couldn't get past two bits, which was, one, what were those guys doing while the sniper was lining up the shot that a brute snuck up behind them? And second was, how does assassinating a prophet stop a supply chain?
He's the only one that has their credit card number, so without him, there's no way they're going to make
orders. Didn't you play Halo Wars? You can walk around with the prophet and pick up those little supply crates. He's the only one who can do it.
Really? Are you kidding me? I
just
Wars? Is this Halo Wars?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, got me with that one. All right.
Nobody.
No, I just got my copy of Halo Wars, but it came with ODST, and so that was not really a hard choice of which one to play first.
I did play
the demo though. I don't know if we want to go into a whole Halo Wars thing. I did play the demo, and I kind of felt what a lot of other people did, which is like pretty much like, you build all your units and you tell them to go that way, and that's pretty much it. You know, it didn't seem like there was much to it. It's a nice experience if you want to have the experience of playing with Halo figurines. I have a feeling that's what it was, not so much of a game, but like a chance to control more than one Halo unit.
Personally, I think
I have to step carefully because I don't want to insult any StarCraft friends here.
Be careful.
There's no such thing as that.
But actually, I want to go back to the babysitter.
Yeah, please.
I have to say that I feel like I want to write like a Dear Frankie, you know, like letter and say, you know, you have a very difficult job, Frankie. You're trying to straddle all these different kind of genres and trying to make it satisfying. It's a very tough thing to do. And I can only think of, like, you know, Ang Lee directing Incredible Hulk, or would we want David Lynch to make a Halo movie?
No.
You know? Yeah. So I enjoy like anime, but I enjoy anime in the same way that it is its own relegated, you know, thing. Like it's on that side of like reality. Like I can get into the wavy hair, the spiky hair, the, you know, the exaggerated poses, the silence, the speed lines, et cetera, et cetera. But I always wanted Halo to be Halo. So I always wanted there to be a sort of a consistency with the actions of the Master Chief, the actions of like even the ODST, and you know, I read Frankie's post and I don't want to beat up on him, but I know that many a time that he'll say we had to service the story, and my feeling is that I wish there was, I don't want them to not try this again with some other genre, you know, who knows what, you know, some other medium or something or other. But I would love it if it was more, we want Halo served first and not the other way around, where it's the anime trope, or whatever other type of media which is being used. I was hoping for more of anime being fit into the Halo a universe instead of Halo being fit into the anime genre.
Absolutely,
so
yeah. I would very much agree with that.
I see what they were trying to do, and it's certainly if it wasn't a Master Chief, if it wasn't like a snotty like ODST soldier, if it was some other type of military, I could be more accepting of it. But because I'm carrying along, you know, these 10 years of reading the books and playing the games, it's hard for me to let go and say, you know, why would a Master Chief in his dying breath, you know, or her dying breath,
oh,
all of a sudden get all
spoilers.
Weepy and, you know, sorry.
Yeah, didn't see it.
It was out a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess we can blame them. But no, I would definitely agree with Miguel said. And yeah, I think it would be better served if they picked something that was grounded or had the foundation of a Halo style rather than just an anime version of it. And I think, to be honest, yeah, they're trying different things and they're trying different styles. As you saw the different ads that they you know, gave... little trailers and little segments showing the different ones that are coming up. Some of them I think look absolutely fantastic. Other ones, artistically, I think, you know, because of the style or because of the artistic license that they're taking, it didn't quite feel like the Halo universe. And I think that's probably what offsets people. I think this first one was probably maybe not the best introduction. They may have picked something else that should have really punched it to people and was grounded in the Halo universe and said, okay, yeah, we're trying this. We're going to try a little different things later, but at least to get people drawn in, that might have been they might have gone with a different choice. I personally wish that they would find a way to select the Halo style that Bungie and the fans, or at least the fans that are interested in watching this, like, and then stick with it.
How do you do that though? Because
I think they're going to do with the anime. I think they're going to do with the anime what they did with the graphic novels, which is that they're going to go scattershot. They're going to choose a bunch of popular artists, and then they're going to see what sticks. And if something in particular sticks, maybe they would continue with that. And they're obviously doing the same thing with the anime. They've picked a bunch of popular auteurs and studios, and they're going to go with that. I think what Halo fans would probably go for is that, you know, you've got the novels that kind of some of them double the plots of the books and some of them cover other events. Why not do like an in-engine miniseries of some of the books or vignettes from the books? I mean, I think Halo fans would follow that kind of stuff. In terms of introductions, I don't know what their options were because we don't know what the other stories are in the set yet.
And you got a chance to see some of them, and the styles were, you know, greatly varied.
Yeah, yeah. What bugged me about the first one was the way they introduced the sniper ODST character, and that they tried to set him up as being a prima donna, as being, you know, this excellent sniper, and then of course here comes the Spartan, and the Spartan's the shooter, you're the backup, and then he manages to mess up every single thing he possibly can. I think the problem with it was is that you can set up him being a worthless loudmouth by having him talk, and they do that. You can't set him up as being an excellent sniper by having his buddies talk about how good a sniper it is. That doesn't establish it. So right off the bat, he was very unlikable. I kind of go with Claude on that in terms of posting the forum, is that like the guy ought to be drummed out of the service and he's lucky to be alive. He's an annoying little jerk. And I just feel that maybe in order to set that up, the story needed to be longer. You needed to see the end of the previous mission where this hotshot sniper pulled the shot off and then bragged about it. So then you could see that, okay, yes, he's a braggart, but he is a good shot. Whereas in this one, you don't know that until the end.
Yeah, no, they didn't establish enough of the characters in the setting. If they'd done, you know, like
Cody,
the traditional James Bond version where you get to see the end of one mission as they start another one, yeah, that's probably...
Yeah, I think that would be a good mechanism that would have worked, I think, for that. I don't know if they don't have to do that for all the series, but I think that would have worked in this one where you're seeing the completion of one mission that gets to show the character just how badass he is, and then you put them in peril later.
I also think that there's
a
perception.
Cody, as a young kid, what did you think?
What did I think? I'm watching it right now on YouTube.
Hold on, he's studying up.
Well, I could tell. I can comment about the graphical style, I guess, just because, you know, so much of a video game. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, graphics don't matter, but they do because the video games are a visual medium. And I think the graphical style in Halo is as much a part of the essence of Halo as is the characters in the story. So when you deviate from that, it's not going to feel the same. So I like already just watching this, I kind of have that feeling that I'm watching something that isn't quite Halo.
I feel the same way about the television ads. For instance, that when they started doing Halo 3 TV ads that were computer generated, but were not done in the engine. I liked the fact that Bungie always ate its own dog food and that they did all of their stuff in the engine. The cinematics were in engine. Even the TV commercials were done in the engine. And then those ads, like the Starry Night ad, it's all very impressive, but it's not exactly Halo. It kind of looks like Halo, but it kind of a smoother, more rounded, more lens flare-y version of Halo that wasn't something I felt I could quite connect with. I don't know.
Well, you jumped ahead to a point I was going to make, but yeah, as far as the perception of this, I think there are certain people out there that have this, you know, ultimate badass feeling and this really edgy feel to what Halo is or should be. And I think the emotional impact of some of the ads, as well as especially the Starry Night one, because I think Starry Night was probably the closest you could get to making a real world-esque type ad for it and still make it feel Halo. Because to be honest, out of all of them, that one I always thought was the best. It was clear, it was concise, it was you know, a straight friggin' shot. It was right to your heart. It was short and sweet, and I adored it.
True, but I just feel that if they had done that in the engine, it wouldn't have looked as good, but it would have been just as effective. And you could have pointed that and said, that's the Halo 3 engine, you know?
Maybe, but to be honest, I love the look of the live version of that ad. But that ad, as well as the ODST one, the Hungarian one, I think where that is a real-world vision of it, as if, you know, live actors and film-quality style. I think that's a perception that people have about how they want to feel when they're playing Halo. You know, that's the visual that they want, that's the aesthetic that they go for. And I don't think the anime kind of delivered on that same feeling with the look and the style that they chose with the first, with the babysitter in particular. So maybe, you know, the future ones will be better or be different or be darker or more edgier or whatever element that makes you more immersed in it, more so than this one.
Okay, well, here's the place in the podcast where normally we'd be talking about a signature moment, an anger, a sadness, or an envy moment. We didn't really talk about a gameplay level particularly in this episode, so I think we're going to have to save that for the next one where we're going to be continuing on with ODST. But so maybe just some final thoughts, final words.
Cody, you want to jump in? And
I'm still watching The Babysitter. All right, here, let me close the window here.
They all die in the end.
Narc was just asking for any final thoughts since we're finishing. We're wrapping up.
Final thoughts. I guess yeah. Just what I want to see Bungie do with Reach is just take what is so great about Halo, which is the core mechanic, and to create something new based off of the core mechanic. Give us new encounters and situations that are going to challenge us to keep it fresh. You know, don't get gimmicky. You know, I really don't want Reach to be, you know, just to have these like gimmicky sections. I mean, Bungie's pretty good about that, but you know, I have this feeling that that's kind of what's going to happen. So don't do that.
What would you call, not to get off too much, but what would you call gimmicky?
Well, like with Gears of War 2, you've played that, right?
Yeah. Well, you mean like the worm sections and the sea monster sections, those kind of set pieces? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, kind of. Or like when you're riding on the back of the, you know, the big flying animal and you just have to shoot around, you know, I mean, it's that's kind of a gimmick. I guess I'm going to eagerly await the Reach beta to see how this is going to turn out. And I hope.
For the Spike Awards, right? The VGA Awards? Because that's nope, we're going to see those. The first glimpse of Reach.
That'll end up on YouTube too, won't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it will, I'm sure. And that's only like, I think, 2 weeks away. Or maybe 3 weeks away. So that should be very soon that we're going to get our first glimpse. of actual Reach gameplay. They said it's the opening part of the opening cutscene.
They're going to show some gameplay too.
Are they just showing cutscenes, or are they actually going to show the gameplay?
Well, no, I'm not sure, but I figured that they would do a little bit of both. But I know that Eric, I think, posted about it, like exactly what's going to be happening, or maybe it was Sketch. He was going to say exactly what's going to be shown, and they're all saying, you know, you just got to wait, and you'll be blown away. My last thoughts are that I'm really happy to have Cody on here. It's good to get another voice in here of the younger of the kids.
I mean, I'm not that young, man.
No, but it's under 30. See, under 30 is the cutoff here. So we needed somebody under 30 who can tell us what's cool.
Well, we could go for some grizzled ancients. Cool.
That speaking of grizzled agents, we forgot to wish a happy birthday to Louis Wu, Claude Rivera at HBO. His birthday was from where I said it was yesterday, but
right.
Happy birthday,
happy
Wu.
Happy birthday,
Claude.
Yep, if you're coming around in your teleporter to get through the time zones, then I'll buy you a beer when you get to LA. that's a Ringworld reference, if anybody.
Yep. Yeah, well, I think Claude will remember it, I'm sure.
Let's see, final thoughts. Well, overall, yeah, if Reach is the subject, yeah, I would definitely have a certain level of hopes and aspirations that this one really does excel. I really want it to. I want to feel what I felt when I played Halo 1. I want to feel, you know, excited and thrilled about the characters again. I want to be excited and thrilled about the gameplay again. I think ODST was actually a step in the right direction. I like fall damage back. I like single weapons and grenade tosses. I like the feel and the joy and the fun that was established before. But don't be afraid of actually trying something new and different based on that. So I love the foundation, but I would definitely love the expansion off into new territory. And I think Cody and Miguel both have points that... it definitely needs to fly more. It definitely needs to get off the ground. They've got a wonderful fan base. They've got a wonderful story set up. It's ready to go. Now let's see what we can do with it. Because they can't keep making these games forever. It's just going to burn itself out if it does. And I would love for it to end on an absolute fantastic bang. I don't know if it's going to be with Reach.
Sure.
They may be pushing it
even
more.
I'm not sure Microsoft is going to let it end.
No.
Although, it does
not.
Seem like...
Well, Bungie's letting it end.
Yeah, it does. Well, I don't know. We've thought for a while now that such and such was going to be Bungie's last Halo game. And then, you know, after Halo 3 was ODST, and now after ODST is Reach. And I think we all think that it should be, and that we want Bungie to do something new. I guess we're just going to have to wait to see when and what that is.
Hopefully it will come full circle. And if it does, I really, really hope that it's given its due course people get a chance to enjoy it as much as they have the other ones, even more so.
Okay, well, thanks everybody for being on, and thanks for everybody out there for listening, and join us next time where we'll continue looking at the next couple of levels of ODST.